Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast. My name is James McDonald. I spend my days interviewing some of the most innovative people working in the tech industry and hear some amazing stories. Each fortnight, we release a new episode sharing these conversations. This podcast aims to showcase the tech projects happening right here in Newcastle, provide key resources to help you grow your tech career, and share insights into the future of the Newcastle tech scene. Hope you enjoy this episode. On this episode of the Nui Tech People podcast, we're going to be sharing the best bits from our interviews throughout 2021. Going forward, you're going to see a mix of in-person interviews and also remote recordings given our current COVID restrictions. We hope you enjoy this mashup episode. On episode 58, we have Nathan Hookaway.
So what can you tell us about the culture and what it's like to work at Zimpl?
It's fun. Yeah. it really is. It's we've got a good group of people in there. I guess from an academic or a theoretical point of view, we're probably like a clan culture mixed with a market culture. So kind of like a corporate family where everyone's ideas are sort of valued. Mm-hmm. And everyone gets an opportunity to put forward ideas and discuss things. We're pretty flat in that regard. But then from a market perspective, everyone prides themselves on being a professional and driving themselves and driving results for the client. So it's a combination of those two elements, probably front-facing with the client. It's the market culture. But internally, it's a pretty good place to be.
Good. I know a fair few people that work at Zimpl and they've enjoyed working there.
So. Yeah. And that's culture's a funny thing. It's not necessary. I'm learning over the years. It's not something that you can dictate or sort of put a slogan on the wall and then everyone just buys into that vision and that culture.
Yeah, exactly.
Taking time to get the right mix of people into the business. It's no good coming from director level. So it's no good myself, Blake or Ryan saying, okay, this is where it needs to be. We'll set the financial and growth targets for the business. And my role then is to facilitate the team and letting that culture reveal itself. And it's done that. It's taken a long time, but we've got there.
Good. And you touched on sort of attributes that are really important to you in terms of those soft skills. Is there anything else that when you're looking to hire people that you that's really a must have?
Our growth to date hasn't really been off a specific formula in terms of acquisition of new staff. I majoritively will be the one leading that new hire. The first thing I'm looking for is team fit. That's always the first thing, and generally you can pick up on that in the first 10 minutes or so. And then closely followed by that is the skill set of the individual to understand whether or not they can meet the demands of the role.
So I
heard a good saying, it's hiring a new person is like giving the keys to your house and letting someone in and taking care of your kids. And it's kind of, I'm the gatekeeper there because I understand that the wrong person in a role can have a bad effect on the business.
And obviously, where I was explaining to you before, we're hiring at the moment as well, and we're really protective of our culture. And it's really important that the next people that come into Nui Tech People as well are going to add positively to the culture. I think that's really key. You don't have to all be the same personality type, that's for sure. But
that's the challenge.
Diversity is really important.
Yeah.
Diversity of thought.
Yeah.
Diversity of people, obviously. Well,
and that's the zeitgeist of the business, I guess. It's sort of it's a collection of individuals that, come together in our case to be Zimpl. The gravity that comes from that, but we're finding word of mouth is just the same way it would be in marketing. Word of mouth's quite a strong driver for new hires.
I know you've had a couple of people come back as well.
Yeah. People want to work in a place with good people that are professional and, are driving towards an
absolutely.
Outcome.
Absolutely. Yep. And is there any productivity tools that you guys use as a team?
Yeah. So
what works for you guys?
From a team perspective, operationally, we use StreamTime as our sort of project management software.
Is that specific to advertising or marketing? I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it'd be akin to like a monday.com or
okay.
It can be repurposed for multiple industries. Mm. It tracks our productivity, our burn rate on all of our projects, how we've costed the project, who's working on it, how it finished, and it archives all that information. So in conjunction with that, I use a program called Magnify that our accountants, Maxim Accounting Advisory, put us onto. So I bring the capacity side of the productivity and efficiency side of the operational execution into our projections. And it gives us a pretty clear picture of the future. So that drives a lot of the growth, being able to forecast 3, 6, 12 months into the future and then just be constantly navigating around where we are relative to that target makes my job pretty easy.
I'll have to talk to you about that later.
Yeah. It's
James and I are thinking, you know, we need to improve some of those back office systems.
Yeah. Well, we spent a lot of time. Ryan's an electrical engineer by qualification, so he's he put together a whole suite of spreadsheets that we were using for a number of years there to sort of track where we're at and where we're going. Yeah. And we built a back-end system. Blake led an internal project called the Zant that was used for a number of years, which helped us to step to where we are now. And that was tracking a lot of our stuff. But this program integrates all of that and it uses APIs to pull in information from different areas. And, yeah, we haven't looked back. Yeah,
good. So I know you've got pretty strong growth trajectory for this year, which may open up opportunities for career development for others. Is there any particular areas that you support your staff with learning or professional development?
Yeah, so there's a number of our team that are just by their own motivation studying. So our head of strategy is doing psychology. Content producer is doing law, which is interesting. I'm doing my master's, as I said earlier. So we're pretty broad in terms of education. We support that. Our videographer's on the path to studying robotics at university well. Yeah, so that's been quite a good hire and a new introduction of service offering through video and photography at Zimple, which is really exciting. Yeah. That's something that's going to form a big part of our growth as we recognise pretty early in the piece that video is a primary form of communicating.
Yeah, and that ramped up certainly during COVID,
The trend towards the way that people consume content and the time, video is going to be integral to that. So we're pretty excited to have Garth on board. He had his own business for 8 years, so he's bringing a lot of energy to the team, which is good. But outside of like your traditional education paths, monthly we hold lunch and learns. Mm-hmm. So that's just where a team member will get up and talk about their specific role, and then that becomes an open forum where everyone can ask questions and help to understand, you know, what an account manager is doing versus a developer versus content. Yeah.
Yeah, great.
On episode 59, we have Mitch Brindle. There's definitely that mix between technology and business where communication is absolutely paramount. On that note then, you're obviously building a team, managing a team these days. What are some of the key skills you look for in the people that you're looking for in building out your cloud team?
Yeah, look, I guess our team's doubled in size over the past 2 years, I believe now. And I guess when I've been hiring, I don't really look for a specific skill set. It's kind of more of the individual. You know, like, yeah, having a fundamental knowledge on stuff is fantastic, but essentially that's not everything. The one thing that we do at NRB and specifically myself is we'll hire for that cultural side of things, but also that straight drive. You know, let's be real, people work to live right. You know, you want, you know, someone who's going to be, you know, putting in what they essentially can to either learn the skills, or they've got the passion to learn the skills to be able to deliver whatever the business wants. So I guess if I had to name some skills, obviously AWS, fantastic, or any cloud stuff. A development background is good too, but infrastructure is good too. The last couple of hires was a mixed bag. We had some that was a dev, some that was infrastructure dev. One guy that hadn't even seen AWS really before. Now he's running the show. So it's like, it's more around when we go through the recruitment process and we sort of ask our questions, et cetera, is how it gets answered. And especially, it's always interesting is like when you kind of, you know, start that whole process and you start talking to, you know, engineers that are wanting to join, et cetera, it's the ones that when they start talking about their previous workplace, wherever it may be, or even a problem at home. Like some have said, oh, look, I'm doing stuff at home and I'm getting agitated. It's the ones that when you see they've got a problem, they are very, you know, animated on how to fix it. And you see them, they start to adjust themselves in their chair because you can tell they're getting a bit passionate and worked up over it. So when you kind of start to reading the body language on like, you really, you know, like that process that you're talking about that you aren't allowed to fix at your workplace currently or whatever it may be, you know, you not only know how to fix it, but it bothers you that it's not fixed. So just knowing that essentially tells me it's like, well, you're probably going to do something about that then, or you're going to want to do something about it. You're not just going to go, oh, that's the way it is, or look, just another day. It's that, you know, you want to, this is cringy as, but, you know, be the change you want to be and all that sort of stuff, but you want to legit make it change. And that's where NIB, like, you know, we want people like that straight up. It is 100%, you know, we're not going to give you a Jira board full of tickets to do. They may look like that, but, you know, we've got projects on. But if you see something that you don't like or you're not happy with, change it.
Yeah,
like
you're encouraged to actually go about.
You are encouraged to spit the pill and come and tell me, hey, this I can. I don't think this is the best way to do it. I've done blah blah blah. Here's the thing. Look, I think this is the best way to do it. Let's do it. Yeah. As simple as that. And there's numerous examples of that going through NIB, and I think that's why NIB, you know, can retain these like very passionate, skilled, hungry people, because we give that opportunity.
Yeah, mate, problem solving is probably, you know, one of the biggest parts you've mentioned there, right? It's somebody that actually does get agitated by a problem and will find a way to fix it. I think that's something in technology as a whole. I think problem solving, people that are actually passionate about it, because as you said, like technology changes so quickly, whether they've got experience with the current tech stack or not, it's going to continue to evolve anyway. So they're going to have to learn within the next 3, 6, 12 months anyway. So them not having every box ticked from a tech stack perspective on day one, it's not the biggest issue. It's have you shown, you know, an aptitude to learn in the past, like or solve a problem? I think that they're the sort of things that I know that have worked in your teams in the past.
Yeah, just honest, that problem solving is good. Probably the one thing with problem solving, with problem solving, I guess, the one thing that we also don't expect really is you don't need to solve it on your own either. Like, I guess don't forget like what we're doing is some stuff maybe bleeding edge. Nothing's like, you know, mostly cutting edge. So there's probably someone in the business, someone around that might be able to help you. So I guess, you know, with the problem solving, it's like a fantastic skill to have, and naturally enough, like you need it. But I guess it's also being able to admit when a problem, or when you're defeated. It's when that problem has defeated you that you now as a person can kind of admit defeat. Because some people tend to not really, like, you know, they don't want to go, oh, I can't do this, I need help. And then if you're asking in a public forum, they may not want to look silly. So that's kind of a thing as well. So it's been able to, again, solve problems, but then realize you can't solve it because you just can't find the resources or whatever it may be. Nothing against your technical or whatever ability that you're struggling with at the moment to like solve this, but then able to ask for help from your peers or whatever it may be. So
yeah,
that's another really big one.
Nice. On episode 60, we have Justin Bain. Your project mean for mining companies or for the actual machines themselves? What problem do you solve there?
Yeah, so three words would be safety, performance, and sustainability.
Yeah.
So I guess diving into the safety aspect, you think of an underground mine, you know, you've got miners down there surrounded by vehicles that are pumping out diesel exhaust, there's heat, you know, it's noisy. And then you think about replacing that vehicle with a battery electric vehicle that is almost silent, so very quiet. Heat generation is reduced significantly, which impacts a lot on the ventilation infrastructure. We're trying to pump air conditioning down into these mines. Someone was giving me the analogy one day about, you know, blowing down straws, and, you know, the further you get down the mine and the pressure and trying to keep these places ventilated. So, yeah. You know, we're creating that, removing the diesel particulate matter, which is a known carcinogenic, you know, like asbestos.
Yeah.
We're creating a quieter environment from a hearing perspective,
yeah.
And a more enjoyable environment. I mean, the platforms, you know, drive better. The one challenge is meeting the duty cycles for the range, and we've been able to do that through onboard charging infrastructure at the voltage for the underground mines.
Yep.
So effectively every location where they have these jumbos or these DCBs becomes your charging network.
Yeah, right. So this is you mentioned you're still early-ish in this. Is we've got multiple vehicles out there running this at the moment. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, so the Bortana EV, Safescape, our partner, they've deployed that underground in Bendigo, underground over in WA. The beta phase is in full swing. So those platforms will be ramping up on mines this year. The Tritev, the 20-ton loader, is in its beta phase. So there's, you know, what is on the books and platforms getting built.
Nice. Fantastic. You're building a lot of that here in Cardiff and then shipping it out.
Yeah, that's right. So I think that was on the safety side of things. Performance, I think we covered in terms of, you know, the electric motors is, you know, instant torque, and they're far more efficient than combustion engines. So the performance and the combining those digital motors with our software profiles, you're able to have a roadmap to autonomy and get a much, much better performance out of the platforms.
Yeah, right.
You know, sustainability is a core focus of the business. Obviously, reducing the greenhouse gas emissions through taking those diesel platforms out of operations. Quite exciting seeing a lot of mining companies moving to having solar arrays and offsetting their greenhouse gas emissions with renewables.
Yep. And then I think you mentioned at some point to me in a different conversation about, I guess, saving some machines from, you know, the end of life as well and the potential to give them a longer life. Is that another part?
Yeah, that's right. So the platforms, we do achieve a lower total cost of ownership and the retrofit model. So what some of the platforms are working on will take a second-hand one in conjunction with our partner. We've got a great partner over in Hexham Batmobile Equipment.
Yeah, right.
You know, they'll prepare a platform, we'll supply equipment, we'll collaboratively retrofit that, commission it and deploy it into operation. So yeah, it's a second life opportunities whilst we're churning through the retrofit phase and designing new platforms.
Oh, that's nice. On top of that project, as exciting as that is there any other projects you'd love to talk about?
Yeah, so another one in the public domain is one called C4 Edge. So it's a military project. The evolutionary digital ground environment is the edge part. And the C4 is the command, controls, computers, communications. Wow. I think I'll probably get smashed by some military mates on getting an acronym wrong after all my time in communications. But yeah, it's a really exciting project where we've got 17 Australian companies collaboratively working together to deliver a sovereign communication solution, so a battle management system solution.
And what does that look like for people that have no idea?
Yeah, so a battle management system is it's like your common operating picture or your tracker. You know, so if you think of this TV screen there, you turn it on, you can see where people are, you can communicate across the force. You know, there's radios involved, there's data involved. It's quite a complex network.
Yeah.
And our part in that project is the battery system, so the soldier level system, and then progressing to an interoperable battery unit system.
Wow. Mate, how do these opportunities come about? Obviously, you're in multiple different fields now and, you know, going down the marine path as well. How's that growth come about for 3ME?
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing kind of leads to another in certain situations. With this particular C4 Edge project, we were asked to present at a showcase for a land tender, of which we did, and of which we've had some positive progression in that space as well. And then that led on to an introduction, and we managed to to put our capability forward. You know, having the operational background does cut through a lot of requirements, because you don't have to go on that steep learning curve of, you know, what's required, how does it fit in?
Yeah.
We can, you know, from a battery perspective, we can say we've carried this shit around. We're going to make it lighter and more energy dense than our competitors.
Yeah.
And we're Australian.
Yeah. And as you said before, I guess it just ties into what is the core of what you do. You know exactly what you do, and then, you know, you use that as you're in, and then you can build upon that, right? So Very nice. On episode 61, we have Ryan Priest.
So, how did you come about starting a career in technology, and what was the main interest for you at the time?
Yeah, so when you asked me that question, I think about remote control cars. So I remember I had this little like yellow remote control car that mum and dad bought me for Christmas. loved it, made a little like backyard sort of thing, drove the car over it and dodging trees and things. I think I was more like more fascinated on the fact that I can hold a remote yet have this little thing drive around and and then I was like straight in my brain's like going, how's it doing that? How is there a signal coming from this to that? And so young at that point. And then like I was saying earlier, is the dial-up modem days. Mum and dad got me one for Christmas and, you know, I thought I was the bee's knees because I was on, on the internet. and, you know, we make a thousand jokes around that, the whole noise of it dialing up, the people on the phone, how long it took just to download an image, yada, yada, yada. But it was unreal. It was so cool. It was like what is this new world, right? Yeah. And then video games started becoming, you know, real mainstream, you know, the PlayStation days. But for me, it was like, you know, how are they doing this? Like, I remember just asking, how are they doing this? And then as I was starting to get a bit older, I started asking more questions around, this was like when Microsoft were really pushing their server systems.
Right, okay.
And, you know, I was fascinated, like just the fact that you could go to a computer in like a business and you could like put in a username and password. I remember this very clearly, put in a username and password, watch my mum was a school teacher and I think I went into school one day and she logged into her
system.
Computer, username and password, and I'm thinking, how do they manage that? How do they manage like thousands of users across all these different schools? And then I what I started doing was this was back in the day when you could log on to Microsoft's website and you could request trials of like Microsoft Server or Server NT or Server 2000, Microsoft Exchange. But they would actually send you out in the mail like the CDs in this cool packaging and all this. So I think I was like 14, 15 or something. And I was just like, I filled out every form I could on the Microsoft website, and I've probably still got it at home now in a box back at mum and dad's house, but just a box full of Microsoft Server NT. And I used to like get a little computer and I'd try and install the software. Half the time it didn't work because I didn't know what I was doing, but I just want to learn, learn.
Yeah, good.
I never got into like building computers and the hardware side. I just couldn't be bothered with it.
It's all networking originally.
Yeah, there was enough people doing it. There was nothing like quite, in my opinion, there's nothing unique about it. And I think I probably made the right decision there because like even these days you can ring up a vendor and go on XYZ and they build it in the factory and send it straight out to you. So hardware never really interested me. It was more process. It was more automation, definitely automation. And I think that's how I ended up doing, say, work with – I won a scholarship with a bank when I was 17 or something.
Oh, wow.
On Central Coast.
And, that.
Yeah, I won a scholarship and they paid for some education. They also paid for Microsoft certifications, MCP. I can't remember. I'm not
MCCP.
I was quite young. I was like 18 and I was like an MCSA or something. Wow. Who knows? But I was working in banking systems. And then I had a few mates join the army, for example, and then I really wanted to understand how defense do it. So I joined the army as well, understood how I really wanted to get into like satellites and long range communication. So I joined the Signal Corps, learnt all around how they, you know, send long range communications from like Australia to Hawaii or how radio systems are used during combat. Wow. Then I wanted to learn about satellites and the IT departments. And then anyway, long story, I don't want to bore you with my past. It sounds interesting at times, but it's probably not.
No, it is. It's an interesting journey that you went on. And what?
Yeah. And then I started my own business, which is funny, right? I don't know what I was thinking, but my business name that I started, and get this, was called Fruit Box IT. Why did I call it that?
I
was like 22 or something. I don't know what I was doing. I had the shirts. I had these like squishy stress balls. I think people felt sorry for me, to be honest with you, because I was...
So they gave you business.
They gave me business. And like every customer, I was doing work for like around Newcastle, I was doing work for doctor surgeries, fitting out them with, you know, Microsoft small business servers. I was quite young. I was like 22 and I bought like a brand new WRX rather than, you know, saving up for a house or something stupid like that. I was doing work for all sorts of people and I lost count of how many times people called me asking if I did fruit deliveries. And I actually and said,
then did you, was that when you realised that maybe? Well,
that's when I was like, I don't know why I called it this. And the logo, even the logo was this box with an apple coming out of it. I should show you it one day. It was hilarious. And I even said to my dad, like, hey, maybe we should get in the fruit delivery service. Because I swear, I was getting like four or five phone calls a day. People going, yeah, can I have like a fruit platter sent out to da-da-da? I'm like, no. I'll come and fix your computer. Anyway, it's weird how it all happens. And so I started working. That's where I met Sean Smith, who was the director of Primatech. And they were doing a lot of cool stuff in the mines. And I just came on board to help him out with his his staff computers. And he needed a server and stuff. So I was doing work with DMAT as well, which they were all working together. But then as I was doing a bit of contracting work with them, there was all of a sudden an opportunity to start actually getting involved in some of the projects that they were working on, which is what kickstarted my career with the mines. And then I straight away worked. That's where I met Gary Thomas and Ben Lamb and Clint Bruin, for example, is that we were Gloucester Coal was my first big mining job, and essentially that whole mine was a greenfield. We replaced all the IT, and between us three, essentially that all of it was us. The whole work with everything from the automation of the belts and the.
I remember that from when I interviewed you years ago.
Yeah, there you go. So I learned an absolute shite ton, to be honest with you. Like, my brain was in overload. Thankfully, I was so young because I could absorb it. Now I'd just be like, what's going on? I'd just probably walk out of the room and just never come back, right? But so, I learned a bucket load. And
what advice would you give to young people wanting to start a career in technology?
I
went all in and just tried to learn and absorb as much as you could.
Stay focused with what you're passionate about. It's very easy to sort of maybe get distracted. There's so many different avenues now. Like, back when I was young, it was like, if you're going to get an IT, it was a pretty clear path in a lot of ways. You go do your Microsoft certs. I did all them. Did my ITIL certs, but it was very clear in the direction you could go. Now it's like you can be like a software dev, you can, robotics, automation, like there's just so many different avenues.
Yeah, and machine learning engineer.
Yeah. And I think it's just all about just like being focused, like just find out where your passions are. Like, you got to do this. You're going to do this for a long time. Like, your career, unless you hit the jackpot, which I've been trying to do, the Powerball, come on, baby. but chances of you winning that are pretty low. So you have to have a backup plan, and that would be probably a career, I guess. Uh-huh. And in your career, you've got to find what you're passionate about. Otherwise, you're just wasting everyone's, not only your time, you're wasting everyone's time.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're going to get bored. You're just going to keep jumping between. And then you're going to get to like the ripe old age where you go, why didn't I just follow what I thought was interesting? Or why didn't I just spend my days waking up and actually look forward to going to work? And I'm definitely at that point. I love going to work.
Yeah.
I love the people I work for. I love what we're doing. I think I'm very blessed in a lot of ways. I'm not a religious person, but I'm definitely feel like, the opportunities that I've had has been a result of me probably being quite vocal about what I want to do, but also just like knowing that I'm interested in something and chasing that. So I guess my advice to newcomers and people coming to the market is don't rush it by all means. Don't think you have to have like this clear path of what you want to do, because you're probably not going to work it out for about 5 years into your career, right?
Yeah.
And that's normal. Like, it's more than normal. In fact, I'd probably encourage it. Like, dabble in a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
But once you find something that really excites you, go and master it. Like, go and do the best you can at it, because it's only going to benefit you in the long run. And you've got to have an end game. And your end game is to retire and spend time with your family whatever it is.
I think there's just a lot of pressure on kids these days to have it figured out straight away.
I think that pressure is like always been there in some ways. It probably stems from both your parents and what the school expectations are and stuff. You do it. A lot of us did just go surfing during the day and don't worry about it. But look, don't take my advice and don't do that. Like,
on episode 62, we have Daniel Pledek. How do you think, I guess, technology's influenced the change today, like right in the middle of the COVID or a little bit post-COVID now? How do you think that journey and going forward, that technology, potential of online learning is going to affect Kit McGrath as a whole, the business model, the edge?
So Kit McGrath was
very insightful in they were already building the online platform prior to COVID. So when COVID did hit, there was the online platform available. So the impacts were not as deep as other industries. Mm-hmm. Moving forward, the online learning, face-to-face, apps, there's a whole range of opportunities. It's really about understanding what the customer wants, how they learn, what do they need, and then being able to cater to their need. So I think COVID was one thing. There's always going to be a place for face-to-face. There'll always be a place for online, and there will be other methods and mechanisms moving forward. So it's really understanding how best to help the kids learn and provide it in a way where they can access it and making it as accessible as possible.
Yeah, cool. I think we had a chat with Anthony, CTO of the university, on the podcast quite a while ago now, and we're talking to him about education, not at children level, but obviously at university level, and how hybrid approaches might be the way of the future, where it might be not a full university degree, but a university degree with added smaller courses, some part delivered online, some part delivered face-to-face, and that sort of hybrid approach or tailored approach to the individual. So it sounds like you're taking that same approach at a child level, right?
Absolutely. It's at the end of the day, it's about getting the best outcomes for the student. Everybody interacts and learns very differently, and you need to be able to cater for as many of those people as possible. And you know, even university is a great example. Back when I was at uni, if I missed a class, I'd have to go find a friend who actually made it to the lecture, get their notes and try to catch up. When I went to university in Canada, it was a bit better because the lecturers wrote the book, so you read the book, you didn't really have to turn up to class. Whereas now you can do it online, you can do catch up, you can watch videos, you can go to campus if you want, you don't have to. So those options make it much easier for people to learn, and that's what we're trying to capture.
Mate, while we're on the topic of education, education I think is an interesting topic for technology professionals. What used to be common and on every job advertisement was must have degree is changing and evolving. Education obviously has a place in society, and university is a big part of that. Let's start with your experience. You've obviously done a couple of degrees now and gone back and then done different smaller courses as well to continue your education. I'd be keen to get your opinion on the value for, let's start with the value for university for your career.
Look, value of university is a funny one. It's very valuable for that checkbox where people require a degree. As you mentioned, it's less important these days, but a lot of roles still want you to have that little checkbox. Yeah, I've seen roles where they want the master's checkbox. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get the best candidate. It's just somebody who's had the time to do a master's degree. Personally, I really don't care if somebody's learnt themselves, they've done a degree, they haven't had time to have a degree. It's really about, can you get the outcomes and are you good at what you do and do you have the right attitude to learn and continue to develop yourself and move forward? So I think it's good that it's becoming less important as a requirement, but I think until the entire business world changes their mindset, there are still roles where it will be limiting if you don't have a degree, regardless of what that degree is.
Yeah, cool. You must have seen, I'm assuming, I'm making an assumption here, but you must have seen some value in it to obviously go back. I know you've done smaller courses with Charles Sturt University and also Harvard. Can you talk to me about, I guess, why you did that and then the value you got from that?
I do the short courses because they address a specific interest or a specific need. So if there's an area I do want to delve a little bit deeper into, the short courses are a good way to just go in and brush up that skill set. I also like looking at a lot of the certification streams because what it does, it gives you a good insight into industry best practice, standards, what other people are doing. So I don't see it as necessary. I think what you do in the workplace is much more important. The experience you gather from real world experience is more important. but it's also valuable to be conscious of what the industry is doing. And you know, if you go to a course and learn one thing, you've got your value for money out of that course. So it's just about staying relevant and understanding the trends. The problem with courses and the problem with degrees are they're designed for what to do in perfect world situations, and no company works in a perfect world situation. So the formal education aligned with an ability to use common sense, adapt, adjust, you know, change tact and approach when needed, will get you the right outcome. So it's a tool along with your other skill set.
On episode 63, we have a two-person interview with Aaron and Will Told.
Anything in particular that I guess is publicly facing that you're super proud of? Anything that people can look at to get a better understanding as to what I guess the end product is?
Yeah, that's a bit of a challenging one because a lot of the time we're working with railways who don't like to share a lot of their actual raw data. But on our website, we have, you know, some examples that we can share, and we go through a bit of it. Also on the Nextcore side of things with the drone-based LiDAR scanner, that's got a lot more marketing spiel sure. around it. And because that's been out there for 3 years now, there's a lot of people using it for weird and wonderful things as well. So it is interesting creating this, and, you know, because it's so applicable to a lot of different areas, you know, you are seeing a lot of surveyors use it, which you kind of expect. It's like, you know, you are shooting lasers from drones, but at the end of the day, it's just like a more advanced measuring tape. So, so you'd kind of expect that use case, but there's a lot of people in like environmental monitoring. We have spoken to like New South Wales Fire. They're interested in fuel loads, and
that's cool.
We work with environmental monitoring with the
Darwin, the Vital project.
Yeah. And they're very interested in, they have a few super sites where they're like basically trying to determine how much carbon's being sunk into those areas.
Sure.
And it's very interesting up there because it's tropical. It burns out, you know, roughly every year. They're trying to figure out how much actually stays there. And, and a very dynamic environment too, because everything just grows so quickly. So they're interested in seeing, you know, how big are tree trunks, you know, what other information they can get from it too. So, that's great. And we've actually seen, you know, some people doing their PhDs on the back of the kind of data that they're capturing.
Awesome.
So, but on the Cordell side, yeah, I mean, the automated analytics that we're doing is fairly class leading. So, and it can be as simple as just, you know, measuring what's around the train. So, obviously trees are a big one. ARTC have a very big network. A lot of areas is fairly low value network. So, you know, obviously vegetation management costs a lot. Trees grow all the time. So being able to make accurate measurements and not just knowing, you know, that there's something that's a problem now, but there's something that could be a problem in, you know, 3 to 6 months, and, you know, doing a lot of that triage, so that they can effectively send the, you know, teams out there to do it more effectively. So,
excellent.
But yeah, we're currently doing, you know, in about a month's time, we'll have hardware in the UK as well as the US doing, you know, scanning, and
cool.
That's kind of great to, you know, go to bed and you're watching, you know, someone out in the US doing scanning, and then you wake up and, you know, there's someone in the UK about to go. It's very interesting seeing all that happen.
So. And it must really sort of validate the, you know, the what you've built, essentially, that it has, I guess, taken root outside of just Australia.
Yeah. And it's one of these things that, you know, you just need to get off the island kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, we, you know, post-pandemic world, it's a pretty big bubble now, but it's very interesting working with, you know, someone like ARTC and going, well, that's a good chunk of Australia's railway network. But and we have looked at even things like roads in the past with the AI, and we've got some very good results from them. But there's just enough differences in roads because, you know, they're not all federally kind of run.
Yes.
You then fall down to New South Wales has like its chunk, and then this larger roads, and then you've got councils picking out their little bits and they all do their signage differently. And there's enough differences that it's hard to scale. But railways, I mean, the Industrial Revolution happened a little while ago now. So
yes.
Some of the processes probably date back back that far. So it's, you know, probably ripe for bringing some technology in.
Yeah.
But a railway, the construction techniques are pretty much the same the world around. So it's been really good for us to see that, well, you know, in the UK and Japan and the US, it's effectively the same thing. Like they look, and especially when you're using the LiDAR and looking at point clouds, it's very hard to tell the difference between, oh, this is in the UK or this is in the US or this is in Australia. They all look fairly similar in that. Once you start looking at the video footage, of course, everyone will have a different stance. We like our signs to be this size and have reflectors around here. And, you know, there's some differences there. But yeah.
Funnily enough, Aaron, since I started a lot of those images from point clouds, you can tell by vegetation most easily which railways you're looking at.
Vegetation
in the UK looks very different than vegetation in Australia.
Absolutely.
And even across the continent, it looks different here and looks different up north.
Yeah. So
that's a easier telltale than actual technology.
Yeah, we'll become botanists yet.
On episode 64, we have David Lynch.
Let's talk about your team and culture at OAS. I know that you've had fairly good retention and you're looking at growing your team further. What are some of the skills and attributes and softer skills that you look for in a new hire? I know you've mentioned customer service. Mm. What else do you look for?
Yeah, look, I think a willingness to learn, I think, is probably a big thing. We try and make sure the engineers that we do have are absolutely part of the client journey, if you like, and part of that customer experience. So we want them to put themselves in the shoes of the customer. One of our core values is acting like an owner. Mm-hmm. So we want them to act like the owner of that business that they're dealing with. So
take accountability.
Yeah. So one of the things that we're struggling with at the moment, Linda, as you're well aware, is recruitment. So it's kind of really hard to get I suppose, experienced, skilled staff in Newcastle alone. We're having to go further afield in terms of Sydney and other places to try and actually get that skilled staff.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a short-term issue that we've got, but so we want to solve it for the longer term. And so part of that is to try and onboard trainees. We've currently got a couple of trainees.
This is your graduate program, Minder Academy.
Our Minder Academy, that's right. So as they come on, we support them obviously through any TAFE processes that if they need to continue to get their accreditations there, we support them through that. And then we put them through our own internal product courses to make sure that they actually got a career path when they come to OAS. Mm. We see that as a huge benefit. It helps obviously the customers and ourselves, but also helps the graduates, if you like, progress their careers.
Yeah, and get opportunities, because I know that that's the highest age group of unemployment at the moment, and the Hunter especially.
Yeah, and especially in a tech world, I think it's kind of almost crazy that we have so many people who are so technically savvy these days on mobile phones and computers, yet there's such a skill shortage in the IT space. So part of our sort of charter, I suppose, is to try and get those people through the various levels within our organisation, right up to a specialist level. So if they wanted to, specialise in data centres or in networks or in cybersecurity.
Security.
So there's lots of different paths that they can choose, and we're more than happy to support them through that.
So your most of your senior engineers are more sort of generalists, or they specialise in certain areas, do they?
Yeah, as they go up, they tend to specialise. And so we've got a couple of people who look after our data centre. We've got a guy who manages our whole network. And obviously they've got understudies, and we're trying to bring those people along as well. That's kind of how it works.
And so with your Minder Academy graduate program, how many sort of graduates can you take on a year?
We've only just kicked it off, and so we've probably just started with a couple to start with. But I think there's a potential for that to grow, certainly next year as well. The two we've got are going superb.
Excellent.
They've got really good communication skills already. They've had previous jobs where they're dealing with the public, and so they're, you know, at times when they have tricky conversations, they know how to handle those conversations as well.
Yeah, good. And I know that we sort of touched on the Minor Academy. What about more senior staff? Do you support them with certifications?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's we're generally a Cisco house, so we follow the Cisco certifications. So yep. We support people through their CCNAs and some of those other specialised type accreditations as well. Yeah, so absolutely, that's part of, you know, we'd be crazy not to support them in those sorts of things.
Yeah, good. Mm. And so everyone sort of fairly much works in the office full time, or they're out sort of on client sites. Is there any other benefits that you offer?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think one of the things which I was surprised at, it's probably a little Google-like, but we've obviously got a lovely office, particularly in Newcastle.
Overlooking the beach. I know.
Yeah, so yep. That's fantastic. We're super lucky to be up there on the beach. So, but we offer our staff free gym as well as lunches every
gym
day.
Memberships.
And all that sort of stuff as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that's
so,
great.
Yeah, we try and make it as, you know, and obviously coffee. Our tech people love their coffee. So there's coffee machines and all that sorts of stuff as well. Just those little add-on benefits,
lunches,
I suppose.
Lunches and gym memberships, yep.
Yeah, people don't necessarily expect it, but they love it.
Yeah, very good. Speaking of education, what education path did you take earlier in your career, and would you choose that path again?
Interesting question. Would I choose it again? Look, I think so I did a Bachelor of Commerce at Newcastle Uni and then went ahead and did my CPA, Certified Practicing Accountants program.
Yep.
And I've also done the Australian Institute of Company Directors, so I'm a graduate there as well. Would I choose that path again? I think it gave me a great grounding from a commercial sense. So, and the skills are very, very transferable across industries. So, you know, I've worked for communication companies, I work for not-for-profits, you know, mining services companies, tech companies, entertainment centers in the venue hire industry.
Yep.
So that's been fantastic from an experience point of view. You don't kind of get pigeonholed. Mm. And it helps you, I suppose, learn so much more about other industries.
And businesses, and you can apply that to other sectors.
Yeah. Would I be an accountant again? Jury's out. Jury's out. Not 100% sure. But, look, I wouldn't change anything. I've had a very fortunate, very lucky career to date. So,
good. So what advice would you give to young students wanting to start a career in technology? What path would you recommend for them?
Yeah, sure. So, look, the TAFEs and universities do great programs and give you the basics definitely around networking. But I suppose, you know, my advice would be try and work within a MSP environment, a managed services provider environment to start with, because you get a very good broad section of experience. Yeah. So the enterprise side, I suppose, is more about one network, you know, everybody does things the same way sort of thing. Whereas an MSP gives you a broad cross-section. There's so many different businesses set up completely different sizes. Yep, absolutely. So some are hosted, some are on-prem servers, some are, you know, different software products. You get a greater, you know, breadth of experience.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, fantastic.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the New Tech People podcast. If you haven't already, please be sure to follow us on our socials. And also stay tuned for a brand new website to be launched within the coming weeks, www.newtechpeople.com.au. Have a great day.